Jeffrey Wells of Hollywood Elsewhere. Nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you.
So, Jamie, just to, before we even get into this, I was searching through the credits that I found online to determine the name of the narrator, and I couldn't find it.
His name is Peter Kelligan. K-E-L-E-G-H-A-N.
Okay. Irish guy.
I think he's actually Polish.
Polish.
To be perfectly honest with you. You may know him. I mean, he's a Canadian actor.
Yeah.
But you may know him as he played Lloyd Seinfeld.
He played who? I'm sorry?
If you were a Seinfeld fan, this was one of the... I don't know if you were a Seinfeld. We are so off topic already, I love it. There was a kind of recurring nemesis of George Costanza's on Seinfeld named Lloyd Braun.
Okay.
And he's a comic actor from Canada, anyway.
All right.
And he's kind of, he kind of looks and sounds, as you've heard, like Clark Kent.
Right.
And that's why I cast him.
You cast him because he sounded straight and upstanding like Clark Kent.
Yeah, more or less. If Walter Cronkite had been available, I might have gone that route.
That's great. I love that. Okay. All right. I'm going to, for the sake of those who have not seen the film, I'm going to articulate for openers the idea and then ask you, because we can't, I don't have a clip to use in this audio recording, to expand upon it. And the essential idea, the reason that you've titled your film Secret Disco Revolution, is because what it did, contrary or apart or from conventional historical recollection, is that it brought into the cultural forefront and the pop music forefront the forces of the gay sensibility, gay men, gay lifestyle, the gay attitude of clubs. It became a way of immersing oneself. Straight America got into the whole, idea of gay culture in a way. It became a force in which women were recognized as not being subservient to men, but having their own determinations, their own lives, and it was reflected in, like the songs of, say, Barry White talking about pleasuring his woman and Don't You Want Me, Baby, where, she's leaving him and she's moving on. There's more of that, right? Have I roughly got what the idea is?
Yeah, I mean, I was presented, I set out to make a film on disco and quickly discovered some new theories that were in the air about what the era was actually about, some revisionist histories, if you will, that were saying that the era as we had thought of it was a total misunderstanding. It wasn't just a time of, wide pants and polyester and cocaine and debauchery and partying and dancing. It was, in fact, a misunderstood time of revolution that was liberating, as you say, gay people, black people, women. And a couple of books came out in the last couple of years saying this. And so this film is kind of a somewhat ironic but also somewhat serious investigation of these theories.
Now, in the course of my thinking back to that era, my first association is of the mid to late 70s, is I think of that as the dawning of the punk era and how that was the thing that I grabbed onto, being a CBGB's habitué and wearing my Death to Disco t-shirt.
These were the two kind of extremes that were bubbling up at that time.
Right.
Punk on one hand, disco on the other.
Right.
And there were certainly, I think at that time, as perhaps you can attest, no love lost between the two camps. I mean, there was the whole disco sucks movement, right? There was ultimately culminating in Disco Demolition Night. I believe there was Punk Magazine or something that had a lot of pretty anti-disco stuff in there. Mm. And this is being pointed to, and a lot of this is being cited by some of the historians I have in the movie. Now, I should say, mm-hmm. by the way, this is finally a film about disco, which I set out to make a fun film.
Right.
It's full of lots of big disco stars, a lot of really fun, great footage
right.
of the time. And ultimately, it's a fun film. But, you know, if people happen to accidentally think along the way, well, so be it. In any case, yes, some of the punk anti-disco stuff is part of what's being cited by some of the historians who appear in the film as evidence of homophobia and racism that they say define the anti-disco movement.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I mean, I think what I'm trying to part of what I look at in the film is the way there are many versions of history that come out after the fact. And the disco era is a fun way of looking at this because it's recent enough that many of the key players are still around to talk to directly.
Right.
But, you know, there's 30-plus years perspective, so the academics are already making hay out of, mm-hmm. you know, defining the movement as this or that. And we can kind of compare and contrast all to a 4/4 beat.
Hmm. Why do you think, I'm not suggesting there's any linkage whatsoever, but why, in my mind, I have based punk sort of kicking in around 75, and as your film points out, I had in my mind that disco started at 75, but really, if you were really there at the very beginning, it started around 74, right?
I think that's around when the term disco began being used, the
okay.
purists will say that it actually started as early as 1970 in certain kind of private clubs like the Loft, which is considered the first disco, as private parties.
Right.
So yeah, broadly speaking, the disco era is, the classic disco era is 1970 to 1980.
Right.
And punk started somewhere in the middle of that, around the time that disco really started getting huge. I mean, disco, I guess, would have been, you know, the main mainstream pop music of the time.
Mm.
In part, punk could then define itself, and in opposition to which, punk could define itself.
Forgive me if I missed it, but you must have had a bit of a difficulty with getting rights to various classic songs, particularly of the mid to late 70s, early 80s. By the way, do you subscribe to the view that disco started to die around 80?
You know, it was necessary. I was determined with this film, you know, to get as many big stars as we could and to get all the kind of blue chip disco songs in there. I wanted this to both be a film that was kind of definitive and at the same time a bit offbeat and ultimately quite fun. So I'm proud, I think, that we did manage to find a way. We did have the budget to get all those elements to come together.
Right.
Yes, I think that at least in the U.S., which is, you know, where disco had been born and then so dramatically flamed out, it was around 1979, 1980, you know, the disco's demise occurred.
When I think of disco demise, I think of Can't Stop the Music as being the death knell. What year was that? Was that 81 or 80? What was that?
Ironically, apparently you could stop the music. I think that yes, that was certainly it was definitely on the way down. The Village People movie, Can't Stop the Music, not remembered as a classic film. I think many people pinpoint it to a day in 1979. Forgive me, gods of disco, for not remembering the exact day,
uh-huh.
but on which an event called Disco Demolition happened in Comiskey Park in Chicago, which was a big event in which a disgruntled radio DJ, Steve Dahl, encouraged many people to come and blow up their disco records at the halftime between a doubleheaded baseball game. I love how I'm pretending to know what I'm talking about when I use this baseball.
Was that only in Chicago when that happened?
That was only in Chicago, but it was a hugely reported, widely reported event, and it was you know something like 70,000 people there. But that sort of the disco, it's considered that the kind of disco brand was sort of irreversibly tarnished at that point.
Mm.
Not in the long run, as it turns out, because in recent years, you know, the word disco is not a dirty word anymore.
Right.
But as we see with new incarnations of the form
right.
and different celebrations of the classics,
mm-hmm.
of the classics, But anyway, for several decades after that, you did not want to be associated with the word disco, as, you know, as bemoaned by many of the stars in the film who talk about, you know, it dying along with, you know, the heyday of their career overnight.
Right. Yeah. Did you go to 54 yourself in the heyday?
I was a child in the disco era, and my main experience of it was dancing in my underwear to the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack for my babysitter. So it was sort of like my own personal Studio 54. Although I do gather they allowed some underage people managed to get in.
Yeah.
I think not that underage, and I was in Toronto.
I thought
apart
maybe,
from that,
you know,
I was a perfect candidate.
But it was quite the mecca, certainly in New York City, and if you were into it at all, and if you were even could pass for 17 or 18, I think it was certainly a place to visit during the heyday.
Well, I've taken it as a great compliment that some of the film's subjects, including Joanne Horowitz, who was a publicist at Studio 54 back in the day, is now Kevin Spacey's manager, have seen the film and said, "Where did you get this footage? This is exactly what it felt like. You've recreated it incredibly faithfully."
Mm.
And none of the documentaries I had seen prior to doing this had given me the same feeling as the editor and I began to get plunging into this particular crop of footage and putting it together. So I'm very proud, and it was very important to me to recreate the era as faithfully as I could. And certainly Studio 54, whatever else dark and you know, nefarious things were going on there, certainly seems like a fun party.
The balcony in Studio 54, I can remember what happened, what that was about. So,
well, they say it's one of those things that if you can remember it, no, I believe you.
You know what, when I would have loved to have seen, because I can't find this clip, but I thought you might have run into it, maybe you had a rights issue, but I realize it's homophobic and therefore deplorable, but I can't help but smirk and laugh a little bit at the famous Saturday Night Live parody number called "Bend Over Chuck Berry" that was about the Village People.
I have not seen this. I have heard tell of this. Yes, I guess we were too busy finding ways to get the actual homophobic clips from Saturday Night Fever into the film. That was all the Saturday night we had time for, and that Saturday. Well, it is certainly rich material for parody, but as it turns out, for Revolution too. Who knew?
Yeah.
And they're not mutually exclusive.
Well, I think that, you know, one thing that I'm really glad that you got into, and I think this is why it even appealed to me on some level, because I wasn't against it initially. I felt turned on by it because, as Michael Musto accurately points out, New York City was a much grimmer, scuzzier place in 75, around there. And there was something about being in a disco club with its kind of, you know, radiantly glossy, strobe light vibe, that it kind of felt good to be in those clubs. It made you feel like you're doing something that was cool. I just remember it was being a cool thing at that time, because partly of the way it made me feel like it was in something that was really different than the down and dirty grit of New York City in the downtown.
Of what it was like. Yes, by all accounts, that indeed is what Musto and others say, and it was, you know, terrible stagflation. It was a grim time.
Yeah.
And but that's why I think part of why disco was seen as escapism more than revolution in any obvious way. I mean, I think it makes sense that these places were a fun way to escape.
Mm-hmm.
That they were also a revolution. Who knew? Did you realize you were fomenting revolution in those clubs?
Honestly, back then, my impression was that it was anything but revolutionary, and it was that disco was mainly music that the Bridge and Tunnel crowd liked, and that real connoisseurs of cool music wouldn't go near it. That in my perspective back then, I have a little more of a you know, kind of a more relaxed attitude. You know, it's not the bothersome thing that it used to be. But I can remember being quite belligerent about my feelings about disco back then.
Don't hold back.
I've mellowed. So.
Unchurch the disco revolution, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're welcoming stray lambs back.
All right, man. It was very, very nice chatting. I think you did. What you've done is come up with a necessary film to absorb. If anybody that wants to know about it wasn't there, someone who, your age or someone older like myself, went through it, wants to think about it again in a fresh way. It's a really good job, and I was totally into it from start to finish. So, it was a good job.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thanks a lot. Pleasure talking to you.
Very nice speaking, and have a good day. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Take care.